Well, good morning. How's everybody doing? Great on Father's Day? Maybe, maybe not. Always seems like Father's Day is a little bit of a afterthought to Mother's Day. It's fitting, right? We love our moms, but glad to have a day for dads too. And it's equally special, if not more, for us. It's our youngest, Sydney's, first birthday today. So yeah, we get to celebrate birthday and Father's Day together. So, if you're here in person, it's good to see you. It's good to be together on Father's Day. If you're online, then I'm glad you're here as well. Feel free to reach out to us, and we would love to connect with you through that form. Today we'll be in our series, The Real Me in 23. You know, we've been talking about various important, difficult topics, mental health, just kind of all across the board. And today we'll be talking about failure. So you're welcome, dads. We're talking about failure on Father's Day. Welcome to the club, right? You know, I always, it's one of the things I think about most and, you know, worry about. My dad and I were talking this morning, just texting and saying, Happy Father's Day. And we talked, he sent me something back saying that it was a great privilege and responsibility. How would you define fatherhood, privilege, and responsibility? It's a wonderful honor and blessing and privilege, but it's a great responsibility too, something that we should not take lightly. And I was listening to that statistic that Andy shared at the beginning, and I was like, wow, really? You know, 1/4 of kids are growing up without dads, and then you see the those college kids playing a sport, talking about God, and I'm like, there is hope. There is hope for the next generation, right? People, even young, concerned about the Lord, and maybe, but maybe not. And my guess is there's probably some strong dads behind some of those young ladies, and I hope to be a similar one. What a great honor, representation of that. And so we'll be in 2 Samuel again, 2 Samuel chapter 15, verses 23 through 26. And this is a continuation of the struggle that David faced in the midst of some of his own bad choices, but family drama. If you think you have family drama, then you probably haven't read the account of King David. And he certainly has plenty, and we'll talk about a little bit of that today. But before we get into that, we've been also incorporating into the series video testimonies from our members. And I got the chance to meet with Mike several months ago, and he filmed this video for us just sharing about their life, family, and some of the challenges. So go ahead and take a look.
Hi, my name is Michael Zuber. My wife Lauren and I have been members of the church for 8 or 9 years now. I wanted to talk a little bit about some struggles we've had and how they relate to our faith, I guess wanted to be the real me. We have a family business, fourth generation dairy farm. It's on the east side of Elba, goes into Byron, and goes into Monroe County, into Churchville. You know, working with family is both a blessing and a curse. It's a great way to raise our kids. We have four children. They're involved with us daily on things we do on the farm. They know how to operate equipment. It's just a great learning aspect for them growing up, and we enjoy raising our family with that sense of duty and honor in what we do. In the United States, probably less than 2% of the population is involved in agriculture. It's quite amazing that if you think about it, 2% of the population is feeding not only the country, but we send exports all over the world. The other thing that's quite amazing is if you think about it, we can produce something in the United States, send it anywhere in the world, and sell it at a competitive price as what they can produce it locally. So it has a lot to say about how well agriculture has grown through the years and, you know, how we can be efficient in what we do. Something like 90% of the agricultural businesses in the country are family-owned still, but they grow and they've gotten large. When Grandpa started the business way back when with his father, I think they started with 20 cows. He died in 94. When Grandpa died, we had 800 cows between two operations. My uncle and father have continued that on, and now we're at about 3,200 cows between the two operations. you know, the older generation has been wanting to slow down, talking about retirement. Me being part of the upcoming generation wants to see the business continue to flourish. So there's been some very hard conversations of, you know, how do we be generous but still be, you know, maintain the legacy of the business and make sure the business can continue. And it's led to a lot of sleepless nights over, I would say, the last 2 or 3 years. I have this habit when I can't sleep at night, I either pull out the cell phone Sudoku and put it on the hardest setting and see if I can do them, or I'll read the Bible. And if it's a really bad night, I end up doing both. But recently here, probably 4 or 5 months ago, I was reading 2 Samuel, I believe it was chapter 15. Forgive me, Lord, because I'm going to paraphrase your word. But the account of Absalom as he was trying to take a coup over the kingdom, King David's son, and David decides they're going to flee the city. And what got to me was, as they were getting ready to flee, the priests went and grabbed the Ark of the Covenant, and they were going to take it with them. And David turned around and said, no, you put the Ark back, and if the Lord wants us here again, we'll be here again. And when I read that, it just kind of hit me right in the face that, you know, I'm losing sleep over this issue with the family and how this is going to affect our business in the future. And I just realized that, you know, it's in the Lord's hands, and I need to trust in Him more. As far as the family aspect, I don't know if my kids will be involved in the business. If they want to be, that's wonderful. We'd love to have that opportunity. I don't want to push them in any way. If they choose to do something different, that's fine too. But I want to be able to provide them with the opportunity if they so choose. And I feel as though my relationship with Jesus and through the Bible is giving me a perspective on how I can properly bring them up into an environment that will be conducive of that. And I'm grateful that all my children have made faith decisions through this church and the people in the congregation that have helped make that happen. Foreverly grateful for what they've done for our family. So that's the real me, and I appreciate your time. Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks, Mike, for sharing. And man, we should know more about like what's going on in our communities, local here in our context. And I still remember when we came to Elba, and I can't remember how it was. Maybe a year later, exactly what was going on. It was kind of a busy time, COVID, all that stuff. And Mike had offered for us to come out to the farm, and I was just blown away. You know, you come from Texas, and you're like, you imagine like a little red barn, and there's like a few cows, and you know, some chickens or whatever, and the magnitude of some of the things that are done in agricultural communities just amazed me. So we get there, and I was just blown away. And so thank you for sharing, Mike, and just some of the struggles you know, you guys have faced, and the Lord guiding you through that. When you shared that, I didn't actually have a passage for Father's Day, and so I was working through this, and I was like, why wouldn't we talk about that? As men and as fathers, how we navigate difficult life situations and family situations, can be really, really difficult, right? We can sometimes second-guess ourselves and be like, I don't know if I should do this. I mean, the whole family's counting on me. You know, I got to make the right choices. And we see over and over again throughout the text, throughout the Bible and today, that even in the midst of like what David was going through, some of the results of his own bad choices, he continued to lean on the Lord, and he continued to trust in Him. And that'll be the focus today, trusting God's plan. So the first fill in the blank is going to be this. Bad day. Everybody's had a bad day, right? Sometimes when you walk outside and you'd like the sun to be shining like it is today, and it's raining, so it feels depressing. And for David, we could say this was probably a bad day. Mike gave you the sermon in a nutshell and what he shared in the video, and so I'll just tag on that with a little bit of the text for today, starting in 2 Samuel chapter 15, verse 23. It says, "And all the land wept loud as all the people passed by, and the king crossed the brook Kidron, and all the people passed on toward the wilderness." Now, these people who had been there with David, who were faithful, would have called this their home for probably at least the last 30 years. There was a lot of tumultuous things going on in the transfer of the kingship from Saul to David. And once he established this place, he had built it up, and a lot of people would have called their this place home. But now this has turned drastically. So for everyone, because of some of the bad choices David had made previously, we talked about this a few weeks ago, the adultery with Bathsheba and the son that came from that, and him end up losing that son. And as a result of those bad choices, God spoke to him and communicated that there would be this tumultuous family and kingshiply reign that would take place all the way until he stepped down. And that's exactly what we see here. But what does David do? A lot of times as, you know, men, as fathers, as dads, we can just go, well, that's just it. I'm just going to throw in the towel. I'm just going to sit on, you know, the easy boy, the lazy boy, and just, you know, I'm gonna call it a day. I don't really want to put any more work. But you know what? I go to work, right? I mean, I work hard, like, so I should be able to kick back, right? Instead of taking that place of leadership in our homes, in our families, and like what David did, he could have just sat back. You guys, you know what? I mean, it'll get itself worked out. You know, we have to flee right now. Sometimes God's calling on us to make just a few good choices and leave the rest to him. So how does he handle this? Well, this is a difficult situation. If you read from the place we were at a couple weeks ago in 2 Samuel to here, there's a lot of things that have gone on, family dramas. Again, you know, I work with people all the time. There's difficult family situations going on, and working through those is hard, I know. But if you look at David's account here in 2 Samuel, there's some difficult things going on. And so you got a couple of different sons. You got Absalom and Amnon, and they're fighting about something that has happened. One of the sons has taken advantage of one of the daughters of David, and one can't stand for that, and so rightly so, and he gets mad at his father David. He goes, David, are you not going to do anything about what's happened? He's got this, what some might call a righteous anger. And so as a result, he ends up fleeing because he kills his brother. He runs away, Absalom, and maybe rightly so. He thinks something's going to happen to him now that he's killed his brother. And he comes back, and David, with open arms, basically receives him back. And how does he repay his father's kindness and mercy? Well, he builds up his own following, and like what Mike said, he basically starts this coup. And as a result, David has to flee, basically, for his life. And if you read anything about David's life, he probably spends a good part of it running for his life or fleeing for his life. And you think a guy like that at this point would have been like, you know, really? I mean, you know, maybe now it's time to throw in the towel, or, you know, I'm just done with this. But David still goes back to the Lord, and we'll see how he reacts. But this is happening for all the people. So the word here for weeping, I was thinking about that, and it says, it's the word in the text, baka, meaning to cry bitterly. Maybe some of you have been in situations like that, or maybe it's been your fault or somebody else's, or maybe even as dads, although we don't do that in front of people, right, because we don't like the kids or anybody else to see us crying. Sometimes that's okay. But the people were weeping bitterly about what had taken place. They're now having to leave their homes. They're faithful to King David, and so they're walking away. What's going to be the result of all this? Well, it starts as a bad day, and here's the second thing. You can fill in if you want to. Good intentions. It's the second fill in the blank. So, you know, as Mike talked about, they're having to flee, but they're not wanting to leave with unimportant things. They're, you know, if you had to leave your house in the middle of the night and you needed the most important things, and you were in this time period, you were living in the city and you were with King David, you probably would have gone, we should take the ark with us. We should take the Ark of the Covenant because it's where God's presence resides. It would have been customary as well. If you read through the text here, it's pretty important to them. And so the priest, I think, with good intentions we see here, trying to maybe do something good. So let's see what happens here. In verse 24, it says, "And Abiathar came up, and behold, Zadok came also with all the Levites bearing the Ark of the Covenant of God, and they sat down the Ark of God until the people had all passed out of the city." Now, this would have been a really normal occurrence. So if there was tumultuous things going on, if there was a battle, a lot of times they would have taken the Ark with them. But the Ark had found a place of dwelling there in the city, and it had brought blessing to God's people who had been faithful to him, and now there's this split, there's this divide in the family, and David's son tries to take over, and the priests go, no, we're going to take the Ark of the Covenant with us, and David does something interesting in the midst of this. Now, again, as we think about this, even as, you know, as men, as fathers, we think, well, that might not have been a bad idea. In fact, probably with good intentions. And I feel like a lot of times we do the same thing, right? Something happens, we immediately go, like, how can I fix this? Like, how can I make this right? I know I can make this work if I just move, you know, the pieces around. And sometimes we just need to sit back and go, okay, God, there's nothing else I can do right now in the situation. I just need to trust you that this outcome is going to be better. It's going to be good. Whatever it ends up being, I'm going to trust you with that. And David doesn't do nothing, right? He flees. So he's leaving. He's doing something. But what takes place? Well, we'll see after leaving, he has this this attitude, this perspective towards what the priests are doing. What does he do? Well, we see this here in the next few verses. In verse 25, and this is the last thing, God's purposes. Well, the good news is God's purpose is always win, no matter what we're doing, no matter what's going on. David had been through a variety of difficult life circumstances. And towards the beginning of his life, a lot of people would have said, well, that wasn't really his fault. He was being faithful to God. And you know, remember, he defeated that giant, and then he got anointed as king. And then eventually he finds himself as being king. And now, full circle, David, if you look at the end of his life, it can be a sad story, but I think it can also be one of encouragement for us, in that throughout that entire experience, David continued to trust the Lord, maybe even when things weren't going his way. And in verse 25, it says, "Then the king said to Zadok, 'Carry the ark of God back into the city. If I find favor in the eyes of the Lord, he will bring me back and let me see both it and his dwelling place.'" That seems like a lot of confidence, doesn't it? A lot of faith. And so I was reading this verse, I just thought, man, David really fully trusted the Lord's purposes. He wasn't going, well, like, here's what I can do, right? And dads, we can maybe, we can understand this a little bit. If the priests were carrying out the ark, I probably would have been like, thank you very much. We're going to need that. We're going to need God's presence, because if we don't, I don't know if we're going to make it back. And David's like, look, you know what? Many of these things are already happening, already set in motion by some of the choices that were made a long time ago. But what can we do? We're going to flee, but we can trust the Lord. And that's exactly what he does here. If I find favor, and I don't know if any of us in this situation would have done this, if I find favor in the eyes of the Lord, he will bring me back, let me see both it and his dwelling place. A lot of confidence in the Lord's plan. As he's running out of town, as his son takes over. And if you've read the rest of the story, you know that Absalom is killed in battle, and certainly not the outcome that David wanted. He showed mercy on his son. He rebelled against him. His son dies in battle, and David returns mixed emotions, as you can imagine. You continue to read the story, and although he trusted in the Lord, it maybe still wasn't the way that he wanted it to turn out, but it was the way that it needed to. He's grieving, and his leadership is telling him, like, you need to show some confidence before the people. I don't know how you would have reacted in that situation, but you can imagine David's, his sons and daughters in turmoil, right? And he's trying to lead, and what else does he have to do? He's like, I can't fix the situation. You can drag the ark out here all you want, but it's not going to fix what's already taken place, right? Sometimes we try to do that. We try to put that Band-Aid on it. We try to pretend like there's not a problem too, and David's like, look, I couldn't fix it. I can't make it any better right now, so I want you to leave the ark there. And Matthew Henry says this about this verse. He said, "Therefore, David directs his speech to Zadok, and an excellent speech it is, and shows him to be in a very good frame under his affliction, that still he holds fast his integrity." And to remain calm in the face of all that and tell them to take back the ark, I don't know. Robert Barron's another guy that I read his commentary from time to time. He said this, I like the way he put it. "At this moment of supreme danger, David does not want to use the ark for his own protection. Instead, he demonstrates a remarkable detachment." Again, he could have taken it. He could have said, let's take it with us. God's going to be with us. Let's get the choir going. Let's everybody singing, you know, doing their thing as we're marching out of town, and we'll be back, right? Now, he's in a broken place, if you can imagine. Your family destroying each other, attacking each other, taking the throne from you, and he's walking out of town. I mean, you can imagine, relatively defeated. I know I would have felt the same way. And what's one thing we could hold on to? What's one security blanket? You know, I like to think about it like this. There's an unimaginable amount of stuffies in our house. If you don't know what those are, they're stuffed animals, and they abound in places with small people, which is, there's always a stuffy to take. But if you're leaving the house, right, you know, if you don't get the right stuffy for the right day, for the right occasion, then things can go really bad, right? So I was reading this account, and I was just going, like, every time you walk out of the house, so you're like, you're down the, you know, you're down the road like a mile, right? Because that's when it always happens. Oh no, we forgot the stuffy, right? Whatever stuffy's name is. It's an elephant in your house or a blanket or, but now these things in the lives of our kids growing up, they're types of security blankets, right? They're types of things that if they can hold close in a moment of difficulty, in a moment of uncertainty, I don't know where we're going, and I'm not sure what's happening. I feel safe at home, and I just, if I could take this one part of my existence with me, then I will feel okay, right? If there was ever a greater security blanket in all of the history of God's people, it would have been the Ark of the Covenant for good reason. And David says, we're going to leave it here. You can imagine what the priests maybe thought. David, I don't know if you want this to go well, but if you don't take this, if you don't take the stuffy with you, if you don't take the Ark, then there's no hope. Like, we don't want to lie to you. It's probably not going to go well. And David says, why don't you leave it there? God's going to work it out. If he finds favor with me still, then he's going to let me come back. If not, well, game over anyway, right? I think David knew the reality of the situation and what had taken place. And we'll close it with this in verse 26. It says, but if he says, I have no pleasure in you, behold, here I am. Let him do to me what seems good to him. So David trusts fully in God's sovereignty, and I think this is one of the more difficult parts for us. Like, we don't take the stuffy with us, we don't take the things, or we don't hold on to the things that make us feel better, or try to fix it. I feel like that's what guys do too, right? Dads are just like, if I can fix it, if I can make it right, then I don't have to feel bad about my previous mistakes. Or I don't have to talk about, you know, what happened then. If I can just, like, turn it around, and now I try to do that too, right? It's one of our defense mechanisms, and David's like, at this point, there's nothing I could possibly do to make things better. I need to fall on the mercies of God. And you know what? At the end of the day, we don't take the Ark. At the end of the day, if I haven't found favor in God's eyes, if I'm in the wrong, then there's nothing else that's going to make this right, right? And sometimes, especially, I don't know, I think about this on Father's Day, we're always celebrating, like the tools, you know, like I like tools too, or the, you know, the fishing, or whatever it is, the things that we can do, the things that maybe make us feel better about ourselves, how we define ourselves. And I love what Andy said in that that article that he was talking about. When you have a child and you have a family, like what do you go to? What's your value in? If it's not in being a dad, if it's not in being a husband, a father, fulfilling those things, then I wonder what purpose we find in life. And David goes, hey, you know what? At the end of the day, what God says is what's going to matter, right? What God says about us, we tend to try to manifest these things about ourselves, or like lift ourselves up on a pedestal as men, and maybe make it better than it actually is. Sometimes we just need to go, you know what? However God views me, whatever my role and responsibility is right now, is really what matters. It's like this inner dialogue too. He says, whatever God says about me is what matters. He says, but if he says, I have no pleasure in you, how painful would that must have been for David, right? To think about his own shortcomings. He's like, I know we've come to this place for a reason. And you can be sure that a lot of that has to do with David and the decisions he's already made in life. To say this to the people, hey, if God says he has no pleasure in me, well, behold, here I am. Right? Here I am. Let him do to me what seems good to him. And this word here for pleasure, I have no pleasure, David says. If God says this to him, it's the word kephates, and it just means to delight in. You imagine the life that David's had, right? I mean, he starts out as this little shepherd boy. I mean, he's already killed a bear and a lion, by the way, but, you know, he comes to the battlefield, and there's all these great men, these great warriors who are shaking in their boots about Goliath. And David's like, I don't know if you, do you know the God that we worship? A giant doesn't matter, right? And he goes out there in confidence, slays Goliath. He takes on his band of merry men or mighty men throughout his time of running away from Saul while Saul's trying to kill him, and then he's defeating all the enemies of God while he's being pursued by Saul, and he keeps coming after him, has chance after chance after chance to take matters into his own hands, and he doesn't. And it's interesting to see the characteristic traits that David had, whether or not he made bad choices, which he did, but throughout his experience, he's always going back to, I want to do things God's way. And I want to know what God thinks about me, how he understands me. And at the end of this, David just says, hey, if he has no pleasure, kephates, if he has no delight in me, then whatever else I can do doesn't matter, right? So I want to challenge us today. I don't know, as men in the room, maybe the ones listening too, I don't think God's looking to us to be like the one that can fix everything all the time, right? You know, our kids will be like, you know, there's all that stack in our house. It's the stuff that gets broken or that needs the batteries replaced or, you know, whatever it is. That when there's a problem, like, the girls will just be like, go and put it in the dad pile, right? Sometimes that pile gets pretty high. You know, he can fix it. He can do it. And if he can't, throw it away, right? And it's not fixable. And sometimes we like to define ourselves like that, but David here goes, I'm just going to throw myself on God's mercy, on how he views me. If he takes no delight in me, then here I am. Let him do to me what seems good to him. But it's a hard thing to do, right? Dad's throwing ourselves on the mercy of God and saying, I want to be defined by what God wants, by how he is going to lead me. And you know what? If he doesn't take any pleasure in me, if I haven't been doing the right thing, then I need to have something changed in my life, right? David knew that. He wasn't coming back in there with, you know, guns a-blazing. He's like, let's get the army together. You know, we're going to take over this thing. Now, the whole end of his experience was, man, God's been so good. I made a lot of mistakes. I'm going to leave the rest up to him, right? And if we could approach life in that way, failure's going to happen, right? Do our best. Leave the rest up to God. That might be a good way to operate. He's got a better plan anyway. And so as I was going over the text this morning, I don't know that I had a good way to end it. I was up early, I was getting ready, I was praying like I normally do, and we've been out at Darien Lake, and I was watching the sun come up over the trees, and I was like, God, how do we get encouragement from David's life? You know, it's easy to always talk about David and Goliath. It's easy about talking, you know, David taking the throne and leading his people, God's people, into this new age of prosperity. But what do you do at the end of his life when he goes into battle? And if you never read this before, you should, but at the end of this account in 2 Samuel, you think things would get better, right? But he goes back into the battle as like an 80-year-old guy. No offense to anybody. But he goes back into battle, and there are these relatives of Goliath who come on the battlefield, and they're looking to get revenge. If you can imagine 50, 60 years later, like, David's an old man. He's like, this is when we're going to get him, right? And his men have to save him, and they're like, you can never do that again. So for the rest of his life, they're like, sit there, don't move, we need you. And in all of this, David is going like, I just need to trust the Lord's plan. Wherever I'm at, whether he was a mighty man taking on Goliath, or whether he was at the end and going like, man, there's some mistakes I've made along the way, but I'm going to trust you, God. And so the Lord was reminding me of some of these situations, some of these people in the Bible. There's certainly people that when we look to, you know, we think like, man, heroes of the faith, like fathers and, you know, and moms of the faith. And on Father's Day, I was thinking, who should we maybe take our example from? Well, God, number one, David, because he not only managed success and failure, and he kept turning to the Lord. And there are a few other people I want to mention. Isaiah in particular, I read this text this week. It's in the New Living Translation. I normally don't deviate from ESV because it's a literal translation. I like sticking to that. But I like the way that the NLT put this. You'll find it in Isaiah 49, 3 through 4. And this is God talking to Isaiah. And he says, he said to me, you are my servant, Israel, and you will bring me glory. And here's what Isaiah says. You probably maybe haven't read this text before, but I thought it was interesting. Isaiah says, "But my work seems so useless. I have spent my strength for nothing and to no purpose, yet I leave it all to the Lord's hand." And then he says, "I will trust God for my reward." If you're going to leave it anyway, that would be a good way to leave it. You think about guys like David, Isaiah, a guy who spent most of his time telling people things they didn't want to hear, trying to lead people in the right direction. And God's like, "You're going to bring me glory." And he's like, "I don't know about that." I mean, I've been doing this a long time, Isaiah's from Isaiah's perspective. And he says, "It seems so useless." Have you ever felt like that as a dad? You're like, "I don't know. I've been doing this, and man, there's some regrets I have along the way, some mistakes I've made." But Isaiah said, "I've spent my strength for nothing and to no purpose." And then he leaves it this way, "Yet I leave it all to the Lord's hand. I will trust God for my reward." I don't know. I'm a dad. I am. A lot of you guys are in the room. Mistakes are going to happen along the way. We're going to make failures, right? But it's not how we cover up those things, I think, that defines. It's not how we like build this false sense of masculinity on fixing things or making things right or covering up maybe some of the failures. It's how we respond in those situations. And it's how we go, okay, here's where I want to be. If you don't find any pleasure in me, then okay, something needs to change. But I love thinking about these guys, these fathers of the faith. And maybe, I don't know, maybe instead of fixing the situation, maybe we can walk away today just going, "I know there's some mistakes I've made. I know there's some ones that I'm going to make. And it's better just to say, God, you know, I trust you with whatever is going to end up being reality. And along the way, help me to be humble. Help me to know that, man, sometimes there's just things I can't fix. And I have to just go, God, I trust you with that." And when things seem meaningless or hopeless, we can leave it all to him like Isaiah did and said, "Hey, you know what? At the end of the day, I'm going to leave it to you, God. You're going to accomplish your purposes." And luckily, we get to be a part of that, right? As dads, we don't have to walk away going, "And I'm sorry I didn't give you, by the way, like 5 ways to be the greatest dad," okay? sometimes it's not the way that it works. But to be able to walk away from the situation knowing that we're living in a real life with difficulties, with failures that we're going to make, what are we going to do with that? Well, I hope we can trust the Lord with it. And maybe if you're here today and you're thinking, "I don't know how to do that. I just failure, that's not how I respond to it." Well, the gospel gives us a good way to respond to that. In Jesus' death, burial, and resurrection, we can say, "Hey, I know I make mistakes," right? It's hard for us as dads, but we can say, "I know I make mistakes." That's the first part of it. And then believe in what Jesus has done for us. And David trusted God so much in the good times and in the bad. And we can do the same thing. We can believe in what Jesus Christ has done for us on the cross, living a sinless life, dying for us, and being raised from the dead. And then we can say it out loud. We can actually say something about that. "God, we confess that you're the Lord of our life, and we trust in you. There's nothing that that you can't overcome, right? That you can't turn around for good. There's certainly a lot of things that we can make failures in. We can make mistakes, but God can turn it around, right? We have bad days, and good intentions, certainly a lot of the time, I hope so, as believers. But then God's purposes are really what matters. So at the end of the day, who do we trust in? What purposes do we trust in? I hope we trust in the Lord no matter what takes place. Let me pray for you and we'll be dismissed. Father, we come to you today and trust you with all this. God, as we encounter failure, especially as men, God, that we would not allow our circumstances and things that take place, even our own bad choices, to define who we are. God, I just pray that maybe not being the fix-it man all the time, maybe not being the one who can put everything back together is what we need. God, maybe we just need godly men who rest on your mercy and your grace when we do fall short. And God, just leave it up to you. I pray that we could do that. God, that our goal would not be being perfect, not covering up failure and mistakes. But God, that at the end of a bad day or a bad season, more than just good intentions, we could trust in your perfect and holy purposes, even at times when we feel like things are maybe not where we want them to be, or maybe we've made so many mistakes that we feel like we can't come back. I'm thankful that we can just trust in you and what you've already done through your son, Jesus Christ, on the cross. God, we don't have to be perfect. And on this Father's Day, I pray that it wouldn't be so much a celebration for us of dads being awesome, but you being awesome, God, and letting us be a part of leading in our families, in our community, and in this church. I'm thankful that you give us a place as men that we don't deserve, but one that you give us gracefully and graciously. I pray we could be like David, that if we don't please you, God, then what other point is there? There's nothing else that can bring us hope and peace and joy other than knowing you and following you faithfully. And it's your name we pray. Amen. I love you, church. I hope you have a wonderful day.